In today's show, I am interviewing Fran McGreevy. This guy is one of my coaching clients, but he should be coaching me. He has so many years, so many more years than I do in school leadership, and he is a wealth of wisdom. He's going to talk about how to see something in other people, leadership by caring, and the question we should all ask of school leaders, what do you love? Thanks again for listening. I never take that for granted, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Hey, Better Leaders, today is a really special day for me. I'm getting to interview a guy that has so much wisdom around school leadership. He's a member of my mastermind, and he is just a genuinely amazing guy. Fran McGreevy has 42 years of experience as an educator, 30 years in high schools as a teacher, social studies and religion, assistant principal and coach, 12 years as a middle school principal. He worked his first 23 years in private schools and the last 19 in public schools, all in the Western New York area. After all those years, he is hungry, to understand learning and the conditions under which it's most likely to occur and how we can create those conditions. He's a husband of an amazing woman, Anne, who just published her first children's book, and the father of four kids, of who he's so proud of. They provided him and his wife, Anne, with 10 wonderful grandchildren. Finally, he is the president of a new corporation, Root Ed Leadership and Learning. He hosted his first conference this past July in Buffalo. And Fran, welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast.
Thank you, Daniel. So happy to be able to be on here this evening.
So all those years ago, Fran, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, it sort of came to me in this sense. You know, I loved the high school scene. I really enjoyed it. Not so much the education end of things, the classes and that, but, you know, I loved the athletics. I was a student council president, just really involved in my school. And when I finished my 4 years of college at a college in Syracuse, New York, a Jesuit college, the principal of my old high school, who was a Catholic priest, he called me up and he said, why don't you come back here and teach, you know? And so I did. You know, I never took an education course. I was not certified. So I went back and I, as a teacher and a coach, and I think what really inspires me is I just totally enjoy interacting with people, and especially young people, seeing them come alive and just being in a people-oriented occupation. So that's really what got me started. And then later I went back and got my certification, and one thing led to another, and it ended up being a long, fantastic career.
Was there something about that invitation, though, that really spoke to you? Or, you know what I mean? Like, it couldn't have been that simple that you were just invited, you know, and then you started to pursue this career in education. What was it about that relationship or that invitation that got you moving in that path?
Well, you know, this priest had been a coach of mine in high school, and you know what I thought was so special was that he saw something in me. You know, he saw something in me, and it was as if he was calling that out of me. You know, he was saying, come on, you have something to give to young people and to this world, and we need it. And he came after me, you know. And oftentimes I think in our world, we miss sometimes those older men and women who sort of call forth the best that is in us, you know? And when someone recognizes something about you, to me, it's inspiring. It made me think, gee, maybe I can do it. And I remember my first year, in a lot of ways, I sort of struggled. Again, I'd never student taught or taken an education course. But, you know, his attitude towards me was, you are doing a great job, you know? And I'm thinking, I'm not so sure. but he thought it, you know? He saw something in me. And, you know, if there hadn't been someone like that at that time, and maybe throughout my years who recognized something in me, you know, I don't know if I would have made it, you know? So I really shout out to you, all you educators who have some experience, just what a great opportunity there is for you to influence young people who are willing to, you know, become teachers and administrators, and just to, you know, call forth the talent, the life, the passion that is within them. Because, you know, we are sorely in need of it in this day and age, you know. I see recently in New York State, they say the number of certificates for certification for teaching are down 20% in just the last few years. And, you know, there's a lot going on in this world of education in which teachers maybe and educators maybe don't hold the respect in that they once did. And so all the more important for, you know, leaders to call forth young, talented, passionate people into this world of education.
Yeah, that is so important. And, you know, I'm going to get the statistic wrong, but I was getting trained on how to be an evaluator in Texas with their appraisal system. And the trainer stated something, and again, I'm probably getting it wrong, but it was something, it was absolutely shocking to me. It was like 20,000, maybe even 40,000 vacancies that the state wouldn't be able to fill for next school year. And you know, my school is amazing. My school district's incredible. We're able to fill those vacancies, but statewide, nationwide, that's a huge problem. I love what you said about calling forth those gifts in people and really, you know, encouraging what you see, you know, those skills and to help them develop it and then to step into leadership roles. I'm wondering, how do you do that as a leader now in your school?
Well, you know, Daniel, I find that, you know, being an educator is just emotionally challenging. And I feel like educators just get the you-know-what beat out of them sometimes, you know. Just, you know, they have challenging students, difficult to deal with, and sometimes administrators, which as one, I understand that, can sort of beat them up, parents, you know, and, you know, you can get worn down and burn out pretty easily. And, I guess I do my very best to remind them how important it is what they do and seeing good stuff in them. And recognizing that and telling them about that, making sure that I bother to communicate about that. I know several times in my faculty meeting, I remember at the beginning of the faculty meeting saying this at least a few different times. I said, when I walk into this faculty meeting, I feel like I walk among gods and goddesses. And, you know, at first I thought, gee, they're going to laugh at me when I say that. But, you know, I almost feel like they sort of slide up on the edge of their seat like, do you really think so, Fran?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I think they so need to hear their value. And of course, it's not BS. I mean, it is in fact true. I mean, there's some talented, gifted, passionate educators. And, boy, what they do is immensely important. Perhaps the most important, I would say, occupation on this earth, you know. And so just that daily, I guess it reminding them as much as I can. And I'll tell you, I often forget. I'll be the first to admit, I wish I could remind them even more often. So.
Oh, that's good. I appreciate you sharing that. Hey, friend, how would you describe your leadership style and how'd you develop that style?
Well, you know, I love to connect with people. It's a people profession, you know, and, you know, I love talking to people, getting to know them, you know, find out about their families, you know, just that relationship, you know, the relationship is just so important. And, developing strong relationships, I think helps me to lead, you know, I think it communicates that I do care about them. I really do care about them. I'm not just worried about, you know, our students getting high scores on the New York State assessments or something, but I care about them as people because they are valuable and they are important. So I think it has a lot to do with that. It sort of grows out of relationship and out of collaboration with, you know, the really great people I have working. I mean, we just have an amazing school, wonderful school, just so many talented, you know, teachers and our mental health staff and my assistant principal and, geez, our secretarial staff and our maintenance staff, just so many, many great people, you know. And when we appreciate each other and we relate in positive ways, it filters down to the students. You know, I mean, the quality of, I think it was Roland Barthes said, the quality of relationships between adults in a building has more to do with the character and quality of that building and with student achievement than any other factor. So relationships, relationships, relationships. you know, and which speaks to the value of the person.
Absolutely. Let's drill into that, though, Fran, with the relationships, leadership by caring. How do you appreciate each other and relate in positive ways? What does that look like for you on a day-to-day basis?
My door is always open. I feel like I will, talk to anyone at any time. I have a little saying that I've repeated many times, and it goes something like this. The number one sign of a dysfunctional family is the no talk rule. You know, like dad might be beating up mom, but we don't talk about it, you know? And so in our building, that's something I want to put out there that, hey, we talk about stuff and I want you to be able to come with me. If I'm doing something wrong, come to me and tell me about it. And I want to be able to talk to you in the same way. We want to have an open, honest, real relationships in which we can address difficulties and find new and exciting ways to move forward in education. So that's one thing, just having that open communication. So I would say that's sort of how it manifests itself. You know, we really try to make our faculty meetings, those times we get to spend together, inspirational, you know, a time to build our teachers up. You know, we just had a really good one this last couple weeks ago, and, you know, several teachers come up to me and said, that was just so inspiring. I felt like I couldn't wait to get in the classroom, you know, and be with my kids and, you know, pour out some of that inspiration to them. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, Daniel.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that open door thing I really resonate with. At this point, it's many episodes ago. I was doing some mini episodes, and I think this was before you joined the mastermind. We were reading this book, Creativity, Inc. But the connection here I'm making is that the CEOs of Pixar, and at this point they had had taken over Disney Animation, and they realized that there was an obstacle with connecting with the highest level executive leaders. There were secretaries and cubicles and essentially like a maze and barriers set up so that you couldn't get to that person. So they couldn't get, in your case, the principal. And so they changed it all. They put their offices smack dab in the middle of all the creative desks of the animators. And then they also, you know, we can't do this at schools. We don't have the budget. But think about the creativity. They added new brightly colored carpets that all from all directions led directly to their office. And they kept their office windows open. The blinds were never drawn. And it just said, you know, you're invited. You're important. We want to be accessible and talk to you. So it's that same open door policy. I love that quote, the number one sign of a dysfunctional family is the no talk rule. And so you're saying we talk about things here. All that stuff, Fran, is really amazing. You know, as a new principal, I find that I have the same heart as you. And I have that open communication, but I need you to help me with a problem, Fran. You need to coach me for a minute. I get frustrated at times, and I think it's more anxious and stressed about, okay, I'm available for this amazing staff member right now. But as a result of that, I'm sacrificing time doing stuff that needs to get done that only I can do, that it can't be delegated, and it's just piling up, and that's stressful. So how do you handle those situations?
Well, you know, one thing that's helping me is really being able to delegate. You know, which is, Daniel, that was great, the book we just read, you know, about delegating, you know, because I'm finding that as we focus on relationships, I'm beginning to see all around me these people, you know, fellow educators, my assistant principal, my mental health staff, teachers who've been around for a long time. I find them beginning to really fill those same, you know, roles or gaps that I think, oh, I got to fill that. Like, for example, there's a meeting and I'll say to Peter, gee, Peter, you don't need me to go. You can do this all by yourself, you know, because he's got the relationship thing down. You know, he's my assistant principal. Or I see that in our, like our mental health staff. You know, we have tough CSE meetings with parents and teachers and sometimes district employees and my school psychologist. Yeah, she handles that. She is so good at it, you know. So part of it is delegating, through our culture, there's a lot of people who are learning to step up. And because you give them that opportunity and that responsibility, and you find them doing it and maybe doing as good as you or better than you.
Yeah.
So how do we get all of our people? Like, I mean, we have talented, amazing people. I have, and certainly you do too, in my building. And boy, you know, you give them a little responsibility and they're like, whoa, they'll never need me again, you know? And part of it is that whole relationship piece. And I'll even say to them, I get a really tough phone call. I said, would you want to call, you know, this mom or this dad who are really struggling? I mean, I'm willing to do it, but maybe you can handle that, you know? So I'm trying to give them opportunity. Did you ever hear of Malachi Pentecost, Daniel?
No, tell me about it.
Yeah, he wrote this book. I forget the name of it. I went to his training, and he had this whole thing about time and really using your time wisely. And he said your secretary should be like, like the president, you know, the United States, his secretary. If someone wants to see you, you don't see him right then and there, go make an appointment with my secretary. And it'll be from 9 to 9:30. So I'll be in my office. Your secretary walks whoever in is going to talk to you. Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones, here's Mr. McGreevy. You have 30 minutes. So then I come in. I talk with him. 9:29, she knocks on the door, comes in and says, Mr. Jones, thank you for coming in. Your time's over. She walks him out and walks the next person in, you know. So this way of structuring your time and making the most of it, I haven't had that level of organization, and I have been hesitant to want to push people away and say, well, you got to go make an appointment if you want to talk to me. It seems less like a family when you do that, but it's worth, listening to him and reading up on him. Malachi Pentecost, he has an approach like that, which really structures your time and could really, through organization, give you some more time, I think.
Is he the breakthrough coach? I just looked him up on Google. Does that sound right?
It might be. It might be. It's been a few years since I attended his. It was a full day conference, actually. Yeah, Malachi Pentecost.
All right. Well, we'll have that linked up for the listeners. And you know, I really resonate with what you're saying. And tell you the truth, in Chicago, there is no help. There's just you, and so you got to be a super high capacity leader. And really, I mean, every leader wears a lot of different hats, but in Chicago specifically, you really have to do it all. There's just not help. I think you could figure out and get creative in delegating with staff members. But for example, in Texas, where I'm at now, I've got a great administrative support team. Counselors are high capacity. And on top of that, too, an incredible front office staff, including an administrative assistant to me. And, you know, by the time this airs, I hope I figured out a little more how to utilize her. But to tell you the truth, Fran, like I'm just learning that. I have no idea because I've always done it all myself. And so, you know, that story you shared about president and a 15-minute, you know, meeting and keeping things moving like that really protects your time. And that book, again, going back to the mastermind and the coach and procrastinate on purpose, we'll have that linked up as well in the show notes. That's the thing. Like Rory challenged us that would you be so careless with your money as you are with your time in terms of how you budget it and how you, you know, manage it. And that's the thing. And that really challenged the heck out of me. And I don't remember if I shared this in the mastermind or not last week, but I made my list of all these things I have to do. And one of my goals to myself was to push myself to finally start delegating tasks. And I did it. And I only delegated three. And that was that was really, really hard. But that's something that I need to do. It builds capacity in others. Gives them new experiences so that when they want to fly the coop and become a principal themselves, they'll have a variety of experiences there. And it allows me then to focus on, and this is a challenge to all the listeners, delegate so that you can focus on only what you can do. I'm the only one that could set the vision and course for the school, for the all staff Tuesday meetings. Like I know what I want to do with that. But if I don't delegate the other things that are important, but not necessarily important for me to do, I'll never get to it. And then we missed out on such an opportunity, you know? So I'm figuring it out. Definitely not perfect at it, but excited to get started.
Daniel, what's the author? Do you know the author of Creative Inc?
That's Ed Catmull. So we'll link that up in the show notes as well. But Ed Catmull is the CEO of Pixar. And he co-wrote Creativity Inc.
Oh, okay, good. I'd like to read that. I would.
Oh, that book is absolutely phenomenal. And Fran, you know, if you check out the podcast too, I did a couple mini episodes digging into some of the highlights that I learned from the book. So that's something you could check out too.
Good.
So I've gone a little easy on you. I'm going to ask you a hard-hitting question here.
Okay.
Fran, what has been your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
I think one of my worst leadership mistakes, which I probably have made more than once, is I tried to be like someone else. I've had the privilege of working with some great administrators over the years, but you know, I had some that had a whole different kind of approach to me, sort of a heavy-handed, carrot and stick kind of approach, you know, strong consequences for teachers, administrators who didn't do what they're supposed to do, et cetera. And I made that mistake as a teacher, really, and also as administrator that I just walked right into. I said, well, this is how this person's doing it. Must be right, you know, and I went that way. But, you know, it really wasn't my heart. It really wasn't what was inside of me. And I found that often it backfired and there was not a good positive culture in the building because of it. There was, it contributed to there being quite a bit of animosity, to there being a line between administrators and teachers. And, you know, teachers don't cross that line. That's where the administrators are. It did not result in a collaborative climate. And, you know what? It didn't work. You know, sometimes when you're heavy-handed and you have consequences and you come up with extrinsic motivators, sometimes they can change behavior, but I'll tell you, they often do not change a person's heart. And they might do what you want them to do, but in their heart, they're in another place, you know? And when I began to see that's really not what I believed, and it really wasn't the approach I wanted, nor the culture that I wanted to set, you know, I began to change it. But I think along the way, there's people that I could have wounded or made feel bad or discouraged through not being who I really was and trying to take on this sort of hard-ass, tough guy approach, you know? I just, I've come to see that I don't think it really creates the climate you want for learning and growth and collaboration. So, and I would say that it got me into some arguments and contentious kind of relationships. And I guess I sort of learned the hard way to be myself and to find out what I believed. You know, this is, you know how you grow up a certain way and this is how things done, so you do them that way, you know?
Right.
As opposed to saying, whoa, wait a minute. You know, how about being authentic? How about thinking yourself about what you really think and believe? How about searching for other approaches and other styles that could be effective as opposed to just accepting, you know, being compliant, whatever the leader says. That's what you're supposed to do, or do it that way, you know? Sort of breaking. I mean, I was a good little soldier as a student and as a young administrator and teacher. You know, whatever they told me to do, I did, you know, and they were right. And I've come to find out that really necessarily isn't true. And it doesn't mean you should be disrespectful to those in authority over you, but it does mean you need to learn to think on your own. And there's a price we pay for compliance, I think, at times, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I've learned, if I'm trying to make things happen just because of the title in my position and using power, using the tough guy approach, as you talked about, that can lead to some change. And oftentimes it does, but it never, ever, and this is so important for the listeners, that doesn't lead to lasting, meaningful, impactful change. It just doesn't. And because you're not connecting on that head and heart type of way. And it's not going to last. You're never going to build anything important that way.
Yeah, and you know, when you bring that kind of culture and you offend people and then comes the separation and the bitterness and all those kinds of things when we really are showing such a high degree of disrespect for one another, you know? Oh, it's painful, painful lessons to learn, I think. But I'm better now than I was.
So tell me the story of starting Root Ed Leadership and Learning.
Well, what's the story of that? You know, probably the last 7-8 years in my life here as an educator, I've begun to think a little bit differently about learning. And, you know, I was an assistant principal in a big high school. I was a dean of students in another big high school. And, you know, I handled much of the discipline. And I began to wonder about all these extrinsic motivators that we use in schools, you know. Oh my gosh, grades. You know, in every way, if you take sort of a negative view, you could say, what do we say to students? You know, listen, you better do what we want you to do or we're going to fail you, or we're going to call your parents, or we're going to suspend you, or we're going to give you detention, or there's all kinds of these extrinsic things that we do, you know, and, I wonder how effective they really are. Is that the kind of, do we want kids because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble? Is that how we're going to get them to conform or get them to learn? I really began to think so much about that. I read this book, Why We Do What We Do by Edwin Deci. He's a guy out of the University of Rochester. And after him, I just began reading and researching more and more and more. I just have been so hungry in these last 7-8 years. Just reading and studying. And, you know, after, you know, like 57 years in education, I start thinking differently, you know, You know, why is it so many kids in our people in our society never really loved school? Not to say great things didn't happen in school, because they certainly did, but a lot of people didn't like school. You know, they couldn't wait till summer vacation, couldn't wait till the weekend. You know, it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't mean that schools, there aren't amazing educators, but I just began to think quite a bit about that. And I also began to become very fascinated with a high degree of burnout in education. So I decided that I talked to my assistant principal. I said, hey, what do you think of working with me? And we could maybe offer an after-school class. Now, we have a setup in our district where you can offer these after-school classes, and teachers have to have so many hours of professional development, and they actually can get reimbursed. And so no principal had ever done that in our district, so we're a pretty good-sized district. I think there's 13 schools, and there weren't any principals who had ever done that. So we put together some classes, and, you know, we started out with just a part one on intrinsic motivation, and quite a few teachers came in the district. And then so we offered a part one and part two, and again, those filled up pretty good. And then we moved into burnout part one, burnout part two. And we really saw that a lot of people were resonating with our message. And what we are getting at is the very foundations of what we believe. What is behind all of our practices in education? And we came up with a logo, which is a tree with the roots down on the ground. Our whole point was, what is at the very root of what we believe and think? What is the underlying principle or value that we are upholding? And, you know, I've come to see that. I tell so many people, I've been going to school 59 years. And, you know, Emily Dickinson said, you're too close, you can't see. And sometimes we in education are too close to education. I've been at it for all these years that you just begin to see learning in a certain way. There's a certain blindness we have regarding education. We're just sort of, it's been embedded in us. And so to begin to try to rethink and think differently about the best ways that people learn, it was out of that that we began to offer these classes, and they really went well. And we got together, Peter and I got together a belief statement. We got a little corporation going. And last summer, we had a mini little conference in Buffalo. Just close to 30 different people came. I think there's maybe 12 or 14 principals from different districts, 3 or 4 superintendents, assistant superintendents and superintendent, and a bunch of teachers. And it was a full-day conference from 9 till 3, and it really went well. We got a lot of good feedback on it, and now two or three other districts have asked us to come and present to their faculties, and Canisius College has asked us to come and present at their conference, which they have coming up. So that's how it got rolling. And, you know, I'm really excited. I don't know how much more time I have in education. Again, this is my 43rd year, but I would like to continue this RUDAD organization, and I would really like to see education continue to change and improve for the better. And I think it's going to involve calling into question some of the baseline beliefs that we have.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show. So where can people find more information about RUDAD?
Well, we have sort of a bare bones website. It is root-ed.org, root-ed.org. And we really just got it going so people could go there to sign up for our conference this summer. But we're going to be working on it. And so hopefully by the time this podcast airs, they can go in now and give us either contact information, and we'd love to communicate with them about some of the things we believe and some of the ways we'd love to see education change.
Fran, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Let me see. What would I tell myself as a novice principal? I think what I would say is it is so immensely important that you learn to value people. I mean, place a high value on people. And that cannot just be words, but it's got to be something that's in your heart, something that you got going in your gut. I feel like every single principal needs to have an aha experience about the value of each and every person. And I think to be a principal, you need to know deep in your heart and your soul that each person has just a profound value. They are precious beyond measure. And with that, that is the understanding out of which you ought to treat every single person that you come in contact with. And I think the value we give to fellow educators helps them come alive and to in turn value their students. So that would be, I think, the most important thing that a young principal, you know, needs to know. They just really are in need, as I mentioned before, really so in need of your support, so in need of your support. And I would be so hesitant to be critical. You know, you tell a young teacher or administrator, you encourage them and you let them know about all the good that they do, you know, that will inspire them to want to do more. But if you're, you know, critical and negative, you know, you're going to take the heart out of them. You're going to take the heart out of them. I know we need to be honest. That's very important. And I know we have to have difficult conversations. I agree with that. But overall, you know, as we read in our last book, Daniel Wright, negativity sticks, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It sticks. And, you know, we have no idea just how much it helps to be positive. Like, I had a little story when I was a young teacher. I don't know if I ever told you this before, but I was a young teacher, and I think I was struggling a little bit, and I was teaching at an all-boys school, 1,100 boys in the city of Buffalo. And I had 37 senior boys in one class. And I was, what was I, 25 years old or something like that, a young guy. And one day, this teacher's about 50 years old. He says to me, he goes, "Hey, Fran, hey, listen, we're going over to my house for lunch today at 12 o'clock noon." I said, "Mike, I can't go. I got a class at 12 o'clock. He says, "No, you're going to my house for lunch." I said, "Mike, I got a class." He said, "It's all set, Fran. I'll pick you up at 12. So I go down to the principal and I say, Bob, this guy Mike says I got to go over to his house for lunch today. I got a class. I can't be leaving school during the day to go for lunch. He said, Fran, it's all set. You're going over to his house for lunch. So I said, okay. So he picks me up. We drive over to his house. Italian guy, really nice guy. He had 8 kids. You know, he had a couple of them still at home there. And his wife had cooked this big spaghetti dinner. She met me at the door, gave me a kiss on each cheek. You know, we went in. And he's feeding me during the middle of the day, you know, and he's laughing with me. And sometime during the lunchtime, he got up behind me. I was walking around. He put his hands on the on the back of my shoulders, and he said, you know, I just need to tell you, Fran, you just have what it takes.
That's awesome.
You have what it takes. He goes, I am so glad that we got someone like you being an educator. And you know what I'm thinking?
Mm-mm. What?
I don't feel that way at all.
Wow.
I'm feeling like, I don't know, I got a challenge handling 37 city boys, you know. But he saw something different, you know, really inspired me. It just made a difference for me, you know. And he goes, listen, I've been at it a long time. And he goes, and I can see it in you. I can see it in you. So that positivity there, again, sort of calling forth of what you got inside your heart, you know. How big that is to have a mentor or someone who sees that in you, recognize that, affirms that. You know, that gives me some inspiration to go back another day, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
To pour myself out. I mean, that's what works, you know. That's the kind of mentoring that works, you know.
Well, you know, it goes back to that calling forth people's gifts and being positive, forming relationships, all these things. It's full circle. One of my favorite, absolute favorite Bible verses comes from Proverbs 16:24. And listen to this one, Fran.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones.
I love that. Pleasant words are a honeycomb.
Sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. And that's the thing is, like, you know, especially in the positions that we have as leaders in schools, and shoot, even if you're just if you're not considered a school leader, just you have so much power with the words you choose to use, and why choose to use those words to tear people down when you could build them up? You know, when you could get more out of them, when you can maximize their potential and really live a full life, have a full experience in everything you do, just by being sweet, right? There's a guy that I really like. People love him or hate him. His name's Gary Vaynerchuk, and you know he's definitely an influencer in social media and just a incredible mind in marketing and personal branding. And one of his recent videos, well, by the time this comes out, it'll be a couple months old. But at the end of the video, he was talking about wanting to create this hat and being inducted into the So one of his listeners asked him, if you were inducted into the Entrepreneurial Hall of Fame, you know, something, something, something. And, you know, he answered the question. But the thing that stuck with me is he said he wanted to wear a hat and have a bee on it, like a bee. And it would say Honey Empire, because that's one of his things, is that, you know, just the importance of relationships, building people up, because you can't do it on your own. It's just not possible. And so again, that pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, healing to the bones. Listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools show, be kind to people, build them up, and you're going to get so much more out of them.
You're so right. And you know, Daniel, our mastermind group, which you run, which I really love and it's been really great for me. I feel like that's something that goes on there, you know, like we'll share some of the struggles we're having as principals. And, you know, all of a sudden you got 7 or 8 other people who are supporting you, thinking about you, you know, offering you support and advice and that. And that's that same principle at work. So that's cool.
I didn't anticipate asking this question, but, you know, you kind of connected there to being in the mastermind. What have been some of the unexpected benefits of joining for you?
Well, you know what? One thing I see, you know, you're a principal. Like, I love this whole topic of vulnerability, right? You know, vulnerability, it's just the foundation of connection. And it's so important if we're going to connect with people. And I think it's our strongest measure of courage is our vulnerability. But as a principal, sometimes it's a little tough to be vulnerable with the people who are working for you, you know? But in the mastermind group, it's a little easier because they're all like on the same level as you. And, you know, that's one thing that I find that it is a really good degree of openness and trust there. And sometimes, you know, it can be lonely in the top in your own district, you know what I mean? And you might not be able to get that level of support. And so that's one of the benefits that I've liked. I love getting to know people from all over the country. Geez, Daniel, there's people from Texas and Ohio and North Carolina and British Columbia and Buffalo, you know? So
right,
I've enjoyed that and getting to know what the culture is like in all their schools and some of the challenges they have and some of the successes they have, you know. Hey, why not steal from other people if it's working, right? Whatever they're doing. So
absolutely. And I think that's a good point, is that it does get lonely on the top, and it's a place where you can just be safe and be vulnerable and ask for help and really crowdsource and rely on the collective genius of the group in order to get better as a leader. And I always connect this to my former pastor's saying that Bill Hybels would say, everybody wins when a leader gets better. And nothing could be more true for me.
Totally true. I totally agree with that.
Fran, what is one book every principal should read right now and why?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you, I'm hungry and I'm reading. Oh my gosh. I got three of them on my mind right away.
Hit me
okay.
With three.
Let me start with Adam Grant. He wrote this book called Originals, and it's about looking at the world differently. You know, do I have it around here? It's around here somewhere. But it's on creativity, and it's just an amazing book. I totally love it. It's research based. He's an author, a professor, University of Pennsylvania in the Wharton School, and it would be well worth a read. You know, if you're going to be creative, you got to look at the world differently. It is just a very much counterintuitive book, which I have loved, and it talks about, again, our blindness and how often we are so blind we cannot see. Oh, just one example from the book, he talks about Seinfeld. When Seinfeld first came out, you know, all the sort of the experts in Hollywood said, this is never going to fly, you know, and it's just not going to be successful. It didn't fit the mold, you know, didn't fit into their prototypes, and then they had these test audiences, and it didn't fit the mold there either. And, of course, we know that it ended up being, you know, one of the probably the most financially successful TV program of all time, I believe, you know. And why was it that everybody missed it, you know? And he makes that same kind of connection. I mean, I make the connection in school. How many students do we have who are filled with amazing potential and we miss it? Or administrators, or teachers, or, you know, different approaches to learning. You know, we've got to be willing to look at the world differently and sort of come out of our blindness. So that's a great book. I love Stephen Pressfield, The War of Art. He talks all about resistance. And he says, if you're going to try to do anything good in this world, you know, go on a diet, go back to school to become a principal, get an exercise program, write a book, you name it, you are going to have a battle on your hands. You're going to meet strong resistance. And that's almost a further indication that you are going the right way. And so to move forward in life, you've got to be ready to fight, you know, and it's worth the fight, you know, because what you have to present and offer to this world is really very, very important. And amazing book. I loved it. You could read it in an hour, I bet, hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I love that one too. And got the audio version read by Stephen Pressfield himself. And that was a killer. You know, it's just incredible. So definitely highly encourage listeners to check that out. What was your third recommendation?
The third one is, I don't know if you've ever read Seth Godin, but he has.
That's like my idol. I love that guy.
Well, I love him too. I love this book. What Will You Do When It's Your Turn? And It's Always Your Turn. You know, just again, it's strong encouragement to find your passion and to go for it in life. And now's your turn, and you need to take your turn. You know, or it's gonna slip away, and you're gonna miss it. And I just love the book. I love many of his books. Link Pin, I think he wrote, and Poke the Box, and several others too. Yeah, I love Seth Godin too. So
absolutely, yeah, so good. I've seen him speak before, and he dramatically changed how I present to crowds now. And as a result, I've always done now presentations that really resonate well with the audience.
Isn't that cool? You know, he's from right here, where in the same school district where I teach. You know,
I know he's from there. I didn't want to bring it up, but I knew you know it.
We're taking full credit for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So, Fran, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Well, you know, I have an old house built about between 1840 and 1850, and I've, you know, totally remodeled it over the years. When I was a teacher, I used to have a little construction business. Well, construction might be a strong term. I did painting, a little bit of roofing, and, you know, a little bit of carpentry and that. And so I love my old house. I'm a former high school history teacher, so, you know, the sort of being in this house that people were walking around in 1850 is sort of, you know, interesting to me. So I love that. I love basketball. Up until maybe 6 years ago, I hurt my leg. I can't play anymore, but I used to play in a men's league up till I was 57 years old, but that's over now. I love playing basketball. I love spending time with my beautiful wife, my four children and their mates and their grandchildren. We get to spend a lot of time together almost every weekend. We're gathering somewhere and just really enjoying life. I got another great bunch of guys I hang out with. You know, a bunch of us meet Wednesday morning when we have coffee and pray a little bit and really support each other in our different careers and occupations, and just have a good time, find a lot of support from each other. None of them are teachers or educators, but those are some of the things I love, you know, some of the things I do for fun. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say is the weirdest thing you've done in the past week?
The weirdest thing?
Yeah, the weirdest thing.
Oh my gosh. What is the weirdest thing I've done in the last week? Geez, I don't think I've been too weird in the last week, although I am pretty weird. I was looking, Daniel, at these. We have this great talent show we put on at school every year, you know, and we have the Faculty Act in the talent show. I was looking at some of the videos from our last three or four Faculty Acts, and ever hear Flo Rida?
Yeah,
Welcome
of course.
To Our House.
Yeah.
Well, they had me lip singing that.
No way. See, there we go.
Wild as could be, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so we, you know, that's been on YouTube, and we've got a great teacher and just a really talented guy named Harry O'Malley, and he spent some time in film school, and he puts together these faculty acts, and he usually sticks me in there somewhere, and all kinds of teachers. And gee, I think we had like 50 some teachers participate in our faculty act, and it's a student talent show, but it's become like a tradition in our building, and it's you know, really popular. Actually, Harry put together another video. Geez, he had 75,000 hits on it. 75,000. It was for these six or four teachers who were retiring last year. And it went viral. It was pretty cool. Yeah, pretty cool. So we've really created a culture in our building where, you know, we're saying, hey, you got to take risks. You know, what are you going to do with what's been given to you? Are you going to bury it? Or are you going to do something with it, you know? And so we've created this culture where it's much better to try and fail than not to try. And actually, failure is just a big part of success. So, you know, we've really created that culture in our building. And I think our teachers and our staff are not afraid to think outside the box and try different things and really go for it. So, I don't know. It doesn't quite answer your question, but I guess it's.
No, it absolutely does. You know, we got to that YouTube, and you know, it's totally up to you. If you want to share it, we can link that up in the show notes as well. People can see you going crazy to Flo Rida. But Fran, that was the first time I used that question, and I'm really excited to continue using it and see just what comes out of people's mouths as a result. So listen, buddy, you've made it to the end of the show. I'm very proud of you. And this is the last question, then we'll say goodbye.
Okay.
But you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Well, the number one essential essential, most important question. Okay, we remember, you know, I'm into valuing the person, right?
Absolutely.
And so it comes down to this. Well, we're going to value a person. What is a person? And I'm an old philosophy major, right? So a person has a mind where they think, they have a heart where they're filled with longing, and they have a will where they choose. So if we are going to honor children and honor humanity, then we better honor what they long for, and we better honor their choosing. Because if we don't, then they're not actually people, right? They are not. We're not treating them as persons, you know. And that all comes from being motivated intrinsically. The extrinsic things we often do in schools can kill that. So I would do everything in my power to help every single student get to the bottom of this question: what do you love? What makes you tick? Like, what is going on inside that heart of yours? That, to me, is the most essential question every teacher and administrator and every student has to ask. And I think very often we are uncomfortable with that question. We don't know how to answer it. You know, one teacher said to me, what do I love? I leave here at 4 o'clock. I run home and pick up my kids from daycare center, go home, make dinner, help my kids at home, put them in bed, and come back and do the same thing the next day. And I never have time to stop and think about who am I and what do I love. Help someone find out what they love, and they're going to run through a wall to learn. It will turn a school and a building and a person upside down. That's the core of who we are. It's about longing. You know, it's about what makes you come alive. So I would insist upon my teachers answering that question for themselves, sharing that with their students, and helping students to begin to mine their own hearts and find out what the heck is in there. I think it sounds like a bit nebulous, but that to me is the heart and soul of schools, or ought to be.
Absolutely. Fran, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, again, you can visit our website at root-ed.org. I guess one thing I would say is, for all educators, I am worried that at times we have so many burned out teachers and administrators. And, you know, my research, this other author I've read, Malecki, who is sort of the guru on burnout, she found out regarding burnout that a lot of times if someone's burned out, they say, oh, I must be doing something wrong. But her research, and it's really sound research, shows us that burnout is not so much a result of what that individual is doing wrong, but it has to do with the culture, the organization, and the system in which they work. And I think oftentimes we lay so much extrinsic motivators on teachers, on administrators, on students, and it sucks energy from them. It does not bring energy to them, but it takes energy away from them. So what can you be doing as a leader to give energy, to bring energy to your educators and to your students? Those are really the critical questions. And there's a ton of research that shows us what kind of practices and that we can engage in, both philosophically and really research-based, that will bring energy to a school and to a building and really transform it. I know it's a long answer, Daniel, but...
No, that's good stuff. What was the author's name again?
Malecki. Let me see. I have it right here. Maslach, Christina Maslach, Maslach, The Truth About Burnout. And it's, you know, it's not written from the educator's point of view, but it's just burnout in general. And we do a lot of staff development on burnout, and it really is inspiring for teachers when they learn, you mean it's not me? I'm not doing something wrong? It has a lot to do with our system. It can burn students out, and it can burn teachers out, and it can burn administrators out. Take energy from us. And there's a lot of changes that we can make to make schools a place where we find energy as opposed to where we lose it.
No, I really appreciate that one. I've never heard it, shared on the show. So we have that Christina Maslach,
yes.
The Truth About Burnout. That's linked up for the listeners as well.
Daniel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Fran. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Fran in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Fran, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel. Good night.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.